Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Lexington, Michigan, earned a BA in communications from Michigan State University, and has worked for the MSU Athletic Department since 1995. He's the architect of the Cold War, an outdoor ice hockey matchup between MSU and University of Michigan, which attracted the largest crowd in hockey history. Since 2008, he's been the athletic director for Michigan State University, the Spartans. His name, Mark Hollis. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Mark Hollis, the athletic director at Michigan State University. Mark, welcome, an honor to have you.
Well, it's great to be with you.
And thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood, your parents, and Lexington, Michigan?
Yeah, I grew up in Lexington, Michigan, and it was, my dad, it's kind of an unusual background. He passed away here several years ago, but he was a Methodist minister, and he got into education and ended up being my principal. So I was a principal's kid and a preacher's kid, both at the same time. But went on, and he worked for Macomb County Schools for a long, long time as a legislative liaison. And I was an only child, so being an only child, and part of that time I was out in the country, it created a situation where you had to think a lot and use your imagination and kind of come up with things. And I do everything from put on Broadway shows in my backyard, and I was a star and the audience. So I think that's some of my upbringing kind of brought about that creative mindset.
Did you sell the tickets even back then too?
I made a lot of money back then. it was a good time. We grew up on Lake Huron over there, and really had a great time. We moved into the village of Lexington, and we're very much part of that community, and I still come back and watch the football team. I watch the softball. They had a little girls softball team that advanced onto the World Series out in Oregon, and big fans of my alma mater up there in Croslex.
Mark, what's the biggest things your mom taught you, and what's the biggest thing your dad taught you?
I think, my mom was one of those who was always home, was always there to listen, was always there to push you along and make sure that you did the right thing, made the right decisions. My dad worked extremely hard, was not home a lot. He spent a lot of time in Lansing and taught me that, if you work very hard, you're going to put yourself in a position to be successful. And while that success isn't always guaranteed, it sure isn't going to happen if you don't put in the time, don't put in the effort, and nothing comes easy.
Tell us about your athletic career, Mark Hollis.
Well,
We only have an hour.
No, I'll be brief. It's not that great. A guy named Tony Monty was my basketball coach who moved down to St. Clair, and he's probably one of the greatest inspirations in my life. He's the only person I invited to the press conference when they announced me athletic director. He was the one guy I wanted to have there. But I played basketball, was the captain of the basketball football team up at Croslex, was their athlete of the year, had a really bad back injury, ended up with a couple of fused discs my senior year of high school, and that kind of put the end of my athletic career, and I didn't want to get out of it, and that's when I reached out to Judd Heathcote and had the opportunity to go to Michigan State.
You got a BA in communications from MSU, and then an MBA in business administration from the University of Colorado.
Right. I always say I got a BA from Michigan State in communications and a BS from Judd, so the working for Judd Heathcote was as much of an education as going through the classwork, because it was an opportunity to prepare, to think ahead, and really allowed me the opportunity to take the academic side and apply it to real life while I was going through college.
How did you ever become MSU's athletic director? Ohio State, they got Archie Griffin, right? Yep. Heisman Trophy winner. How did you do it?
I think, again, it comes back to how do you prepare yourself? There's 115 Division I athletic directors in the country. And, everybody that's in this business, I think, is working for that opportunity. And, again, I come back to, if I didn't achieve it, I would not have considered my career a failure. But at the same time, you want to give yourself that opportunity. So Judd Heathcote gave me an opportunity with Joe Kearney out in the Western Athletic Conference, and I worked for him for about 9 years and had an opportunity to speak with a lot of people in the bowl business and the TV industry. And from there, I followed one of our ADs back to Pittsburgh for 3 years. Ended up at Michigan State in 95-96, and then just worked hard. And I, you know, it's not a game of politics. It's a game of working extremely hard, doing the right thing. And fortunately, President Simon gave me that opportunity.
Mark Hollis, other than playing golf 4 or 5 days a week, what does an athletic director do every day?
You've seen my game. You know I don't play 4 or 5 times every week. It's a lot of hours. It's very much a strain on. You know, on your relationships with friends and family. It's late nights, it's traveling on weekends, it's, you know, 17-day road trips to raise money to attend meetings with the NCAA or the Big Ten to make sure your legislation is in the right way. But it's also supporting your student-athletes and your coaches, and that's, you know, that's where I try to keep my focus in the mission statement that we put together for the department. It's focused on, first, our student-athletes, and then, second, the community that supports Michigan State on a daily basis.
Are there one or two other athletic directors, Mark, that are your mentors, the people you look up to?
Yeah, I think I've grown very close to the group of guys that are in the Big Ten Conference, and each one of them you go to on different purposes. Gene Smith is a dear friend down at Ohio State, and Jim Phillips at Northwestern are two that I'm extremely close with in the Big Ten, but very close with all of them. And then you look out, you know, Jeremy Foley down at Florida, and Kirby Holcutt at Miami. You just look around the conference, and I think, you know, you can never be afraid to ask for help, and that's part of the process. But you got to know who to go to and in what situation. If one of your kids get in trouble, you want to be able to talk to somebody who has gone through an experience with a very negative situation with a student athlete. If you're talking about scheduling, there might be other people you want to go to. But it's not being afraid to ask, but knowing who to go ask what question.
When you're with the Big Ten athletic directors, do you regularly complain about the officials to each other?
Just to Delaney, we know. You know, the officiating is a hard job, but at the same time, you're very, very competitive, and you tend to watch each play maybe a little bit differently than maybe most fans would. And it's, you know, I have great respect for the people that make those decisions on the field or on the court, and I think when you watch replays, it's amazing how many times they're right, more so than when they're wrong.
We're talking to Mark Hollis. When we come back, we'll ask him how many sporting events a year he goes to. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Mark Hollis, athletic director of MSU, and one of his roommates in college was Tom Izzo.
Tom Izzo, yep, he's been a friend of mine for nearly 30 years, I guess. We roomed together when I was a student manager for Judd, and they brought Izzo down from the Great White North up there as a grad assistant, and he didn't have any money at the time, so Judd wanted to have somebody for him to room with, so he stuck me with him, I guess, so to speak, and we've been dear friends. He was the best man in our wedding, and you know, we've had a great, great time together, whether it be here at Michigan State or maybe other stints. And we've always, you know, we've always relied on each other to talk to in good times and bad. And I, you know, I think he's probably one of the best ambassadors for not only Michigan State, but the state of Michigan.
When you negotiate with somebody, Mark, if I have pictures or stories on the person, I have the upper hand. With Izzo, it seems you both have pictures on each other and stories. How does that work?
I think it's kind of like throwing two flags in a football game. It's offsetting penalties, and you just go in and take it straight up. But he's, you know, he's great to work with, and it's there's been no problem in any kind of negotiations with Tom because it's, you know, we value him greatly at the university, not only within athletics but across the whole campus. And he's a person who works extremely hard. He goes out every night and speaks to groups when he's not recruiting. He'll be in Southwest Michigan, I think, two nights ago, and he'll be in Port Huron speaking, and he'll be down here in Macomb County. He gets out and he moves around and really spends a lot of time promoting the university as a whole.
How many MSU sporting events will you attend this year?
You know, I try to attend as many as possible, and I think, you know, 3 to 5 a week when you get into the crunch season is probably an accurate number. It's hitting soccer, it's hitting the baseball, the softball, and it's important that your presence is there and that the student athletes know that you're around. But you have to blend that with the number of meetings that you need to attend. You also have to blend it with trying to be part of the campus and being at academic situations, being where faculty and some of the administration is at throughout the day. And you know, I think if you're required to be at something, it's very different than if you just attend something. And that's what we try to do within athletics, is not only myself, but make sure my associate ADs are very much part of what's going on campus on a daily basis.
Experiencing last-minute victories or last-minute defeats is almost, to you, like brushing our teeth. How do you, Mark Hollis, manage those highs and those lows?
I think Joe Kearney probably helped me more with that than anyone. When I was in a league office for 9 years, it was a situation almost where you couldn't show any sign of emotion. And you had to go to a BYU Air Force game. And while you maybe wanted one team to win and one to lose, you couldn't demonstrate that at all. And I think I've kind of tempered kind of a mood where you stay even keel and you try not to be a fan, but you try to figure out what do you have to adjust when teams are doing very poor, when teams are doing very well. And so I'm not one of those, you know, I think maybe at the end of Michigan I might have jumped up about 5 feet off the ground, but I tend not to get too emotional both on the wins and losses, but try and look at it from an even keel standpoint.
You're a natural marketer, you're a natural salesman, and you are a great salesman for MSU. Tell us about MSU.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at Michigan State, it's and you're in the job I am, it's really easy because it's something that you have a great deal of passion for. And I love the university. I love mid-Michigan. I think it's an easy thing to sell. Now you step back and go, what is Michigan State? And quite frankly, we're going through a process right now to try and look at that ourselves and see what is it we are. But from my standpoint, I think we're a university that's of the state of people, or of the people of the state of Michigan. I think we, you know, our students come from here. Most of them return back to the workforce and in the state. And, you know, I think Luann has done a great job. President Simon's done a great job of taking that in-state mentality and exposing it to the world, to a global standpoint, not only through our, you know, study abroad programs, but also hitting a facility in Dubai and then bringing research facilities into East Lansing that not only create jobs but continue to expose what great things we can do with the workforce in Michigan through IBM, through EFRIB, the Collider. I always tease her. I say we're going to bring in a new football player named Adam Crusher to help promote the EFRIB campaign. But it's athletics works right alongside President Simon in pushing those initiatives forward. And, you know, I think in this state you're either blue or you're green. And I guarantee you I'm all green.
The future of the state is green, right?
Future of the
state.
That's
what our governor says.
You got it.
So, the oldest profession in the world, arguably, is salesperson. Some will say the greatest salesperson ever lived was the Jewish carpenter from Nazareth. What makes a great salesperson, Mark Hollis?
I think in my profession, it's listening and trying to get a temperature of what people want. In athletics, you're a very much a discretionary dollar, so you have to create a product that people desire. So I always tell our coaches, you know, you can help our recruiting efforts by winning. I think that's the easiest marketing tool in college sports, but it's also creating those atmospheres or situations where people want to be part of something. And that's what we did with the Cold War. That's what we did with the basketball. But more importantly, that's what we try to do on a daily basis with all of our events, is when a person walks on campus, they have a great time from the point where they park, they tailgate, they get to walk around campus, they walk into the stadium. You know, you walk through that portal and see the green field for the first time, maybe as a father and a son, and just have a great, great time. And it's, you know, there's challenges with that when you deal with 75,000 people on a football Saturday, and there's so many different types of personalities that walk in there, and it challenges you because there's things that happen in there that you don't necessarily like, but you have to try and monitor it, control it. And if you can create that good situation, if you can create what people desire and want to be part of, that takes care of the sales part. So I try to be less of a salesperson and more of someone who creates opportunities for activities that people enjoy and have a great time at.
the last couple of years with the NHL and the outdoor hockey game on New Year's Day, you were the one that created that Cold War concept. How did that come about?
Well, it actually came about from one of our assistant hockey coaches who suggested it, and he'd been talking about it for years, and we grasped it and really started to look at it and ran with it. And it was a situation. We went to our board of trustees, and we went to President McPherson at the time, and the great thing that I always say is they gave us a chance. So many people could come in with a concept like that because it was very, very risky. It was a high cost. It's never been done. It was a huge, huge setup. It was at a time during the calendar year in October where your weather could go either way. And the fortunate thing is President McPherson and the board said, yes, let's give it a try. So at that point, we really dove into it, and we looked at a number of different ways to pull it off. And I think the greatest compliment of the whole thing, not only was the quick sellout, the great event, the kids loved the night, the student-athletes loved the ice. It was just a phenomenal night, but it's the replication of that evening all over the country. To see the NHL annually do something that started in East Lansing was a huge compliment.
When you watch this annual NHL game now, what do you think?
It's satisfying. I think, you know, some people ask, are you going to bring another one back sometime? And, you know, I doubt that we will. We're looking for what's that next thing that we want to do to kind of set the mark. But it's, you know, you sit back and you look at it, and generally they'll make a comment about the Cold War, and they'll talk about where it started. And we've consulted almost with every one of them on how we pulled it off. And I think they're going to do one up in Wisconsin with the college program this year. So it's, you know, it's satisfying to see something that you did and have it replicated and know that you were on the front end of that.
It was in 2001. You had 74,554 people.
Yep.
3-3 tie.
3-3 tie is probably a fitting end. It was an exciting finish, and we had everything from singers to fireworks to flamethrowers, and you know, Bill Martin was very cooperative in the whole game, and it was, you know, it's something that I don't think you could have pulled off without it being Michigan State and Michigan.
In 2003, you did something relatively similar. You called it Basketball. Please.
We called it Basketball, and it was, you know, that's when the late Dave Glazier, who's was a very close friend, and we lost him a couple years ago, we sat there at a Lions game, and we looked down on that field, and we said, wouldn't it be neat if? And that created the impetus for the largest crowd ever to watch a basketball game. And it's also set the tone for the Final Fours of the future. And I think, again, you look at that, you know, ingenuity, the can-do attitude, and try and do an event that has become the benchmark now for the Final Four. And it was, you know, an unbelievable event here last year. We're going to look forward to Indianapolis, and hopefully we'll get our Spartans down there again. But there's several venues around the country, Houston and others, that can create that opportunity and can, again, replicate what Michigan State had the foresight in moving forward with.
We're talking to Mark Hollis, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Mark Hollis, and in 2002, he was awarded the National Marketer of the Year Award by the NCAA. Mark, take us back to April of 2009, the Final Four weekend here in Detroit.
Well, I don't think that's anything that'll ever be replicated. I think, you know, Tom and I sat back and looked at that Final Four, and we said, it's not going to happen again. It was a unique situation. I think you were looking at nationally an economic crisis that was sweeping across, and then you looked at what's going on in our state. And I think that Final Four was a situation of hope. It was an opportunity. It could not have come at a better time. But it was an opportunity for people in the state of Michigan to just kind of sit back for one weekend and look at an opportunity for hope. It was a basketball team that quite frankly wasn't supposed to be here. Tom did one of his best coaching jobs ever, got past a number of number one seeds in the tournament, and you end up in a city where you have You have 40-some thousand people come to a practice. 10,000 were up at Somerset for a pep rally, and then over 140,000 watch our two games. And that's not to mention everything else that was going on in the city. And as you look at the NCAA tournament, you try and put in your mind what would that have been like had Michigan State not been a participant. I think it would have been a very different story. And I think, you know, I think the NCAA appreciates all that we brought. It was a stressful time for us, and it was a stressful time for the NCAA having a participant that close. I don't know that that's ever happened before, but then to have it happen the first time they're in a venue where they have 70,000-plus seats. So, you know, I look back at that, and the one word I use is it provided hope.
The Somerset pep rally. 10,000 people. You couldn't find a spot to stand in on those three levels in that mall. Were you there? And tell us about that.
I was there. I was on the stage when the team walked in. Had an opportunity to address the crowd, and right before Tom walked out, and you know, I looked back at Tom, and his head went down, and there were literally tears coming out of both corners of his eyes. I think the kids were stunned. That's an opportunity that Tom has never taken them to before at a Final Four. He's never taken them to a pep rally. But he felt like, you know, we were outside of the city. He didn't know quite what to expect, but he wanted to give the kids something that gave them that Final Four experience. So he bussed them over right before practice and walked in there. And it was an incredible experience. And it's one I don't think Tom will forget for a very, very long time, nor will I.
Later that night at the DAC, there was a Coaches for Cancer event that he had committed to come to months before.
He did, and it's he stuck to it. He keeps most of his promises. His hair's still in place, but he keeps most of his promises. And you know, he was down there for that event, and you know, was very much a positive part of that program, and he is to that charity as well. He does so many things for Coaches versus Cancer, and that was a very fun evening. But the police escort got him down there and back very quickly.
What do you mean he keeps his hair? Can you?
Well, he made a little promise to the Izzone group when they were camping out a year ago that if he wins a Big Ten championship, he's going to shave his hair. And it's been a bit of a controversy up there in East Lansing where nobody has seen him bald yet. So I think Loopy kind of put the nicks on that one, and he's had a few short haircuts, but he's never gone all the way.
Can you share with our listeners two or three special stories about Tom Izzo?
Yeah, I think I think Tom is a very unique person, a very unique coach, and I think, you know, when you look at how he goes through his life, I think he has so much passion for Michigan State to be great, and along the way, he may get frustrated or he may get concerned that there are things that are in our way to not allow us to get there, and he really struggles. You know, really struggles through that, and I think that's a sign of a great leader. It's there's nothing in his life that's too small to address immediately. If he if he views a negative comment about himself, his family, his program, whether it be on a blog or somebody that emails something in, he takes the time to address it. He'll randomly select an email and call the person up and invite them to practice to see if he can address something where somebody just randomly throws out something in words. It's so easy to do, and really humanize it for that person and bring them in and make them part of the program. And then that message goes out so many times. But it's he loves people. I think, you know, we had a football game when John L. was still the coach at Michigan State, and it was a rainy day, and the number of fans were way down. And he called me up, and he said, come over and pick me up in the golf cart. And we rode out onto campus and got out of the golf cart, and we literally walked from 10-foot tent to 10-foot tent, and he just thanked people before the football game for coming to that last game when they didn't have to. And it was, you know, it's that sign of doing just that little bit of extra, that little bit of difference, and he's been that way all his life, and I think he always will be.
Let's switch sports. Tell us about Mark D'Antonio.
Mark D'Antonio was a very good friend of Nancy and myself when they were on Nick Saban's staff, and his kids play with my kids, and he's been a dear friend. But you look back at what his background is, coaching at Ohio State with Tress, coaching out at Kansas, He's worked for some great coaches, and Earl Bruce and Glenn Mason. And we looked at that. And then he went on and he became a head coach at Cincinnati, and we really desired to bring somebody in that had that head coaching experience. And frankly, the guy wouldn't talk to us until his season was over, which was kind of one of the funny stories of the whole process. So, we ended up calling him right at the conclusion of his last game, set up an interview with him, and put together a contract, an agreement, had his whole staff here within a matter of about 48 hours of that game being over with. So we moved aggressively and quickly and knew he was a guy that we wanted. And he is a coach that is very demanding. He has a great personality, and the players respect him from top to bottom.
There's a rumor that you talk to the football team on Thursday evenings. Is it true? And what do you tell them?
Yeah, I like to go over and talk to the kids. Mark gives me that opportunity. I do it with a band. I do it with the football team. I have an opportunity to meet with the basketball team. I try to get around and talk to most every program, but those football kids are the lifeblood of our athletic department, and they're a great collection of guys. They're from very different backgrounds, and it's a good opportunity to go over there. Mark's also put in a honorary captain program where we have an opportunity to have folks like Morton Anderson, Don Coleman, other guys like that can come back and also provide that inspiration or motivation on a Thursday leading into the Friday prep right before the games.
You mentioned the band. Mark Hollis, what role does the MSU band play in MSU athletics?
Well, they just gave me a jacket the other day, which I was one of the few that they made me an honorary member of the Spartan Marching Band, and my dad would have been very, very proud. And it's, they're very much part of that, bringing the show, bringing the full package to the fans that come to the game. And they're a motivation factor. They're an entertainment factor. They practice, quite frankly, as hard as our football team does. And I know that because their practice facility is right outside the window of my office. And at 4:30 every day, the Spartan fight song comes on just like clockwork. It's to the second at 4:30 every single day. So John Madden does a fabulous job, not only with the marching band, but also with the Spartan brass that's there for so many other events.
I've been blessed to have Coach Tom Izzo on the show, George Blaha on the show, and Susie Merchant on the show. Talk to us about Susie Merchant.
Susie is as down-to-earth as you get. She's one of those gals that's always been in the state of Michigan. Grew up in Traverse City and coached up at Saginaw Valley and then down at Eastern, and we're so fortunate to have her on our staff. She embodies what Michigan State's all about. I mean, her desire to be there when we offered her contract. We're sitting in Ron Mason's home at the time, and she just literally broke down and cried at how excited she was to be the head coach. And then she had to go through a very tough situation with that first team that she had of, the girls that were recruited by Coach McCauley and making them her team. And it was a tough process, and she went through it very, very well. She's a great coach, and I think just another great ambassador for our university.
We're talking to Mark Hollis, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Mark Hollis, the MSU Athletic Director. Mark, another alum that I've had on the show is Steve Smith. Tell us about Steve Smith.
Not a better guy. He's without a doubt one of the best Spartans that has ever been. And he's, again, a good friend. He's always my golf partner when he comes back up to Michigan. And, when I do get out those 3 to 4 times a week, as you're saying, it's always good to be on the course with Steve, and we have a great time. I think, he's one of those people that you look at, and he is totally unselfish. And some of the things that he has done, you look at the gift that he provided to Michigan State, one of the largest ever that a student-athlete's given back to their alma mater with the Clarabelle Smith Student-Athlete Academic Center. And didn't put his name on it. He put his mom's name on it. And I think that's kind of a symbol of what he's all about. He was Coach Izzo's first recruit. I think somebody that Tom will always hold very close. There was my son went down last summer to Atlanta with a group of folks, and There was about four or five kids from Okemos High School to do inner city work in a charity basis. And I let Steve know about it. And Steve called TR, my son, and took the group out for a dinner. And that's something you don't have to do. It's something he didn't do because of me. He did it because of the way Steve Smith is wired. And, you know, I think he does it for Pershing. I think he does it for Michigan State. He does it for the city of Atlanta. He's just a quality, quality individual, and we're blessed to have him as a friend at Michigan State.
Mark Hollis, talk to us about the life of a college athlete today.
Well, I think it varies depending on what sport. We have 25 sports up at Michigan State, and each one of them have a little different path. But I think if you could generalize it, it's time management lesson 101. It's how do you take walking off of a playing field or a playing court in high school, and all of a sudden you're thrown into an environment with so many different people. Your classes are all over campus. You have academic sessions you need to go to, tutorial sessions. You need to strengthen conditioning. You have practice. There's all these different meetings. And, of course, the time that we spend is very much regulated by the NCAA. But outside that, they still have to be the normal college student. And you want them to have a social life. You want them to have a very good athletic career. And you also want them to be successful academically. And mixing those three things is a challenge. And, you know, we have people in place that help them the best that we can. But in the end, it's up to them to kind of go through that time management lesson as a freshman and then evolve as they go through their years at Michigan State.
What do sports teach us about life?
Well, I think, yeah, you look at the winning and the losing, but you also look at all of the preparation. It's, you know, winning and losing are conditions where neither one is permanent. There's always going to be something that changes, and it's how do you react to those changes. And if you take a look at our football season this year, you can kind of walk through the walk of life, you know, losing to Central Michigan, a very good Central Michigan team, but at the same time was a setback for our program. So it's how do you adjust to that? Do you fold? Do you work harder? What do you work on? And then you start accumulating some wins. And right now we've had a couple good wins back-to-back. How are we going to react to that? Are we going to feel like we're fat and sassy, we're good? Or are you going to continue on the path of we want to get better? What's our goals? Where do we want to go? I think, you know, it gives you an opportunity to look at how you react as a fan, criticism. Is the criticism being used to get better? Is the criticism being used to knock down? And that's something that I've always looked at very, very interestingly, is how are we taking that criticism and how are we making ourselves better rather than feeling like we're being pushed into a corner.
The basketball season will soon start. What's your projection about basketball this year?
Well, you know, Tom always puts me in a hard spot, so I think we're going to win the national championship this year. But we have a very good team, and, you know, Tom's working right now. We have Midnight Madness, which kind of starts the season, and then they'll go through practices and lead up to some games. We're playing some very good teams in Texas. We play Florida. So there's Gonzaga's coming into the Breslin Center. Very good teams in the preseason, and then, of course, a really tough Big Ten Conference schedule. You know, we're going to be all right. We're going to have an opportunity to be in Indianapolis for the Final Four, I think, if everything goes right. But there's so many breaks that you have to have through that process. There's nobody I'd rather have coaching our team come March, though, than Tom Izzo.
You're around 50,000 young people every day. Talk to us about young people today.
They keep you thinking. It's, you know, I think the one thing, if I talk about kids that you look at are all these generational changes, is that the change in technology and the impact it's had on people's lives, it keeps you thinking. You know, you hear Twitter for the first time, and then after about a week, you really know what it is, and you know how to use it, you know how to apply it, or else you're going to fall behind. You have to know how Facebook works and how all that goes. And I'm fortunate to have three great kids, and they kind of teach me at home, so I know where it's going. But it's, you know, if you look back at the past 5 to 10 years and you look at the changes in technology and then how that's really impacted the lives of how people approach campus on a daily basis, it's phenomenal. You know, the changes that have happened and taken place and how we've had to keep up with it. But it's, you know, I think the biggest negative of that whole situation is what I call the helicopter parent phenomenon. Our kids now have the opportunity to reach out to their parents maybe 8 times a day, where when I was in school, I was lucky if I called my parents 8 times a term. And it's that funnel of information that's going by text message or however they reach back to their parents, and it's immediate, and it can create a little bit of positive or negative feelings toward campus, depending on how that flow of communication is going. So, I think that technology piece has been a dramatic change in the way young people think today.
Throughout your life, you've dreamed big, Mark Hollis. A lot of people in this state have quit dreaming. They're afraid to dream. They need hope. How do they get that dreaming again?
Well, I think, again, you go back to the success and failure. If you do nothing, nothing's going to happen. And, I'm not afraid to fail. And I think that's one thing people have to keep in mind. Don't be afraid to fail. You've got to try and apply. You've got to try and dream. And you're going to have setbacks. You're going to have situations where something doesn't work or you get criticized or you get fired. And those are daunting tasks. The biggest thing that I don't like in our department is when a person just is comfortable with the lot in life that they have, and they're not willing to try and take new risk or new challenges. For when they do that, we're going to sit idle as a department. We can't allow that to happen.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight, Mark Hollis?
Well, I think this is going to sound a little bit hokey or a little bit corny, but a good friend of mine, Tom Thomas, taught me very, very well how to set a tone or how to set where you want to go with your path. And, we created a mission statement and a vision for our department, and that mission statement impacts every decision that we make. And I was the biggest naysayer of mission statements when we started. But it's, how are you going to make your decisions in your life on a consistent basis for what's important to you? And you have to use that mission statement in order to accomplish that. And if nothing else, that's what I would tell kids, is figure out what it is that you want in your life, write it down on a piece of paper, and make your decisions based upon what you wrote down.
Mark Hollis, from all of us green throughout the state, one, thanks for all you've done, but more importantly, thanks for the way in which you do it.
Thank you, Jack.
Honored to have you. Our guest next Sunday will be another phenomenal lady, the Goat Woman, Keziah Hancock. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.